commissioner to manage the herd. We don't propose that. We propose that the Yukon government and the state of Alaska manage the herd. We're looking for protection of the habitat, as you see it up there, the range of the porcupine caribou herd. We only, the commissioners of the international treaty will only become, if you call it such, manager of this treaty, only in emergency cases if the herd started to decline. Until that time, both countries will manage through its State Department or through its territorial government. We recognize that the state of Alaska Fish and Game will manage on this site. All we worry about is the quota, how much should be taken every year from this herd, how that's divided between two countries. That's their prerogative to make that decision.
Tony Vasca.
Thank you. Jonathan, how does the state of Alaska, through the Department of Fish and Game, deal with the sovereign government of the Kuchin? I mean, you're saying that you're dealing with the International Porcupine Commission as a sovereign government. How does the state of Alaska, through the Department of Fish and Game, represent your interests as Alaskan citizens, or how do they deal with your government?
We deal directly. I don't know how else to answer that.
Mr. Chairman, perhaps I might direct the question to Larry Spengler.
Yeah.
Larry Spengler.
Tony, I guess I don't quite understand the question.
I don't either.
The question is, the sovereign government of Vinitai, Fort Yukon, Mr. Solomon mentioned several other villages. Basically, you're dealing with a tribal government, an IRA government that was formed some years ago, and they are the principals in the negotiations with the Canadians using the International Porcupine Commission, which is recognized by the United Nations. How does the state of Alaska deal with that?
In developing the state's position on the international porcupine caribou matter, the state consulted very directly in a series of meetings with the International Porcupine Commission, with Jonathan Solomon's groups and so forth, and then also opened the whole matter up for wider public comment and had one or two meetings at which other people could come and express their views, and all of those were taken to the governor's office, and final decisions were made on what the state's position would be. Now, when we go forward from here on, the state and the various components of the state will have to be working through the Fish and Wildlife Service, through the federal government, in dealing with the federal government of Canada. That's our view of the situation. Now, there may be another way of characterizing that, but that's the way we would see it.
Yeah. Bob Childress has worked, I think, with the International Porcupine Caribou Commission, and Bob, you had your hand up. If you'd like to say something, maybe you did at once have a name card here, but it's been confiscated, I guess. If you could find your way to a seat a little more comfortable, you're welcome. Well, they found your name card. Now they just have to.
Mr. Chairman, Bob Childress is a consultant to the Porcupine Caribou Commission.
I wanted to comment on a couple things that were just raised. One of them was the question of how management would be addressed in an international agreement that we've been discussing, and I think we should also drift back to the question of what role the tribal entities play. Strategically, the the approach that the IPCC has taken has always been a minimalist one. We wanted to be very careful not to confuse domestic issues, and particularly domestic issues relating to tribal matters, with international issues. In terms of the treaty, which is a part of this puzzle that addresses specifically the international issues, we wanted to restrict its scope of activity in the first instance to those elements that were inherently international, that dealt or had to deal with the herd as a whole. And those really came down to two issues, we thought. One was overall mortality and getting some handle on the total allowable take out of that herd under conditions of stress, which we do not believe exists now, but that had to be prepared for. And the other was habitat protection and the integrity of the habitat and their ability to move within their range elements. Consequently, when this issue first arose, we were active in Washington, D.C. on some federal legislation that dealt with Alaska. When the minister from Canada raised the issue of an international agreement, our initial reaction, the reaction of the communities up there, was basically negative. And the reason is that the history of international agreements have primarily served to restrict harvest once a problem was encountered, once a population was in decline. And our concern was that efforts should be directed at preventing a decline in the first instance. That got us fairly quickly into issues of habitat protection and how to coordinate management and away from the mainstream of historical wildlife treaties to which the United States or Canada are parties. What we did is we really started pushing the habitat issue. The kind of scheme that's reflected in the memorandum that Woody referred to is in greater detail than the discussions we've had with the state so far. You ask whether how the state was, how receptive the state was to the particulars, and I'd have to say that we've come to a more generalized understanding that would accommodate all of the particulars that we mentioned, but they're not all addressed at this time. In any case, we wanted an agreement that dealt primarily with habitat protection and that that minimally interfered with other domestic arrangements. In Canada, there's a porcupine caribou cooperative management board being structured. In Alaska, there's an our existing management framework with the boards and commissions and local advisory committees, and a really unknown role that tribal governments may play directly that will hinge on a number of legal questions having to do with what is Indian territory and so forth. With respect to habitat, first of all, the board, as suggested, is advisory. With respect to habitat, we had suggested a series of essentially procedural approaches. There would be general habitat standards that would be prescriptive, but the agreement that we've envisioned is primarily procedural. It is based on, respect to habitat, a series of three interlocking obligations of government. First is to notify an international board or commission of proposed activities that may affect the herd or its habitat. The second is to give the board or commission an opportunity to present evidence or comment before the appropriate bodies. And third would be an obligation, what's sometimes called an action-forcing mechanism, an obligation structured similar to the International Whaling Commission, where a country would either implement the recommendations of the commission that seemed very important for habitat protection, or would formally reject them in some way, making themselves responsive to the proposed commission. With respect to restricting of taking, it was envisioned that the commission's activities would keep track of mortality losses and the general condition of the herd, and only at such times when it would be necessary to restrict mortality might there be a overall harvest limit established and some allocation between the two countries. The agreement itself would not interfere domestically with how that allocation was otherwise to be dealt with inside that, those two countries.
Yeah, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I think at this time that if Dave and Victor want to make a statement on this issue, because we all went through the same thing.
Well, I was going to ask Victor Matander of the Council of Yukon Indians to follow. So, Victor, you go ahead.
With respect to the International Porcupine Caribou Commission, one of the other aspects that that we see is to ensure that the native users' rights to the herd is protected. And we know that one of the, I think from the onset, when we started discussions with Alaska Native communities, we wanted to ensure that, first of all, that there is the political will between the two countries to establish an international treaty. And as probably many of you know, that this topic has been talked around for a number of years. I guess prior to the last presidential election, President Carter was prepared to sign a Porcupine Caribou International Agreement, but as a result of that, I guess I understand now that there's some will now to move ahead with that. That's great. But what we see, if you don't mind me getting into some of the discussions, what we see happening in Canada, we see two things. First of all, that there be an in-Canada agreement. Secondly, once that's in place, then the international treaty should, the process should be started for that between the two countries. And one of the things that we want to ensure is that when that discussion starts, that we be involved in discussions at the highest level to ensure that our interests are protected, to ensure that we have input from the user community perspective as to what issues and what the agreement should look like. Keeping in mind too that the most important is that the habitat is as it is today and would remain that way into the future. One of the things, that map on the wall there is indicates the habitat area both in Alaska and Yukon. That herd is about approximately 135,000 animals, and it's a very significant range. It ranges from in Yukon, just north of Dawson City, into the Northwest Territories, right up to the beyond the coastline on the North Slope, and well into Alaska, including very sensitive biological, environmental sensitive areas up there. And basically, there are in Canada 8 user communities, those being Old Crow, which is primarily the main users in Yukon for that herd, Dawson City, Mayo, and then Northwest Territories, Fort McPherson, Arctic Red Village, Iqaluit, Inuvik, and Tuktoyaktuk. And those communities are involved in discussions with government in arriving at a management agreement. At the table, the Government of Canada is represented through Northern Affairs and through the Department of Environment, along with the Government of Yukon, which is the managers of the herd in Yukon, and the Government of the Northwest Territories, which a portion of the range does go into the Northwest Territories. Therefore, they have responsibility for management. One of the aspects that we see is that we want to ensure that there is cooperation in terms of the management of the herd and its habitat, and to, first of all, ensure that there is conservation of the herd itself with the view of providing ongoing subsistence needs of the native users. Secondly, is to provide for the native users to participate in the porcupine caribou management. Thirdly, is to recognize and protect certain harvesting rights of the porcupine caribou for the native users, while at the same time acknowledging that there are other users, non-native users of the herd itself. And that would be set out basically in the agreement itself. Also, to provide communication amongst governments and government to native users and amongst native user communities. Those are basically the primary objectives of the agreement itself. The board is established under the agreement. It is a powerful board that would advise the minister in ministers in government, federally and territorially, and basically would be made up of 8 representatives. Equal representation between government and native, and equal representation between the natives, the Yukon Indian people and the Native people of the Northwest Territories would also be equal. The functions of the board would be to establish and maintain communication, as what I had said earlier. It would determine what actions would be followed or recommended to the minister. It would have the right to hold public meetings on what its findings are and recommendations, and what actions are necessary in that area. Also to review technical and scientific information that that is available, and also to encourage native users on the collection of statistics and biological information in reference to management itself, and also to provide or maintain a list of native users that use the porcupine caribou right now or in the future. The board would also recommend, in terms of making policy, legislation, and regulation, would also recommend on what management strategies should be followed, what a management plan should look like. It would also provide recommendations as to what guidelines of native users' participation within the management plan itself. Also with respect to native people's participation in the training in management, there's going to be training programs established whereby native people would be involved in all aspects of management. The board will also recommend predator management plans, control plans. It would also recommend research proposals. It would review and recommend as to what should be done in that area, and methods of collecting data or biological information with respect to the porcupine caribou. I would also recommend what we consider a very important area is the habitat itself, to ensure that the habitat is protected and maintained. And the board would keep that as a very important objective to ensure that the caribou is maintained and protected for the future generations. The board itself would also recommend what land use planning should be up in that area in terms of proposed developments for resource extraction. The board would also take in consideration what should happen in that area if it impedes or delays or disrupts the herd itself. And also with respect to habitat, as you know, in the North Slope area of Yukon and Alaska, it is very sensitive because of the calving grounds. And the board could also recommend that sensitive habitat areas are protected because of development that may be planned in the future. It would have, the board would have access to all information within government, documents that are confidential. There is confidentiality. It will be respected by the board members itself. So the board would have access to all information necessary to conclude its recommendations to the minister. One of the things that we want to ensure is that the native people that use the herd would have preference to the herd itself. We also want to ensure that there is no commercial harvest of the caribou in that area, and that native people that would be eligible to sell the non-edible byproducts of the caribou, those kind of things would be considered in the agreement itself. Basically, what we see happening now, the discussions have been going on for a number of years, and still to this day, we've initialed an agreement, and pretty well most of the parties have agreed to it, with the exception of the Yukon Territorial Government. They have some problems with the present agreement, basically in the area of composition and how the allocation of caribou is set up. They want to ensure that the board allocates it rather than how the communities allocate the quotas that would be set. So I guess we expect to have, there seems to be right now a move on the part of the Yukon government to put in place an agreement very soon, and we probably expect to have this agreement signed by the end of the year. This agreement here would be included in the land claim settlement, which in turn would be protected under the Constitution of Canada. So that those agreements, as they arrived at, and consent given to by our communities, would therefore be put in place and set, I guess, in our claims agreement. It would be put into the COPE, the Committee of Original Peoples Entitlement Land Claim Settlement Act, and later into the Dene Nation settlement when it comes about, and would be protected, we feel, under the strongest law of this in Canada itself, under the Constitution. Once that agreement's in place, we would then see ourselves being involved in how the international agreement should come in place, and this is where I feel it's going to be quite valuable that the Alaska Native peoples and the Yukon, the Northwest Territories, must get together and work together and plan strategy together, and to ensure that the interests that we have, which are common, are put in place and protected to our satisfaction.
Well, thank you. Maybe I could suggest how we might proceed now. Forgive me, I know a little bit about this, not very much, but a little bit. And we have a caribou herd that ranges between two countries, crosses the international boundary between Alaska and Canada. And this has been a fascinating example, it seems to me, of native people on both sides of the border forming their own caribou commission and insisting that the principles that they have developed should be the basis of agreement between Canada and the United States, and observed by the territorial government on the Canadian side and the state government on this side. Jonathan Solomon mentioned my recommendation I made to the Canadian government that there be a wilderness park established in the northern Yukon. with guaranteed Aboriginal hunting rights within the park. And that park, not exactly the one I proposed, but it's an imperfect world. But it was established, I believe, in July. And perhaps we could ask Bob Gamble to mention something about how that came about, and then Hugh Monahan to discuss the matter from the point of view of the Northwest Territories. And then we could have some questions about the Porcupine Caribou Commission. And then we might ask Victor and David to talk about the CYI's approach to subsistence in their land claims generally in the Yukon, because, of course, this is just the northern part of the Yukon Territory, and their land claims proposal deals with the whole territory. And then perhaps Hugh might tell us something about the Cope land claim. I'm
could you get a couple of points of clarification?
All right. All right. Yeah. Steve is going to
I just want to clarify a couple of things, Victor. The board that you were talking about, is that a separate board within the Yukon Territory that will be in charge of the management of the porcupine herd, and is it distinct from the rest of the game management regime in the territory?
It is separate from the rest of the game management board that is set up. The Porcupine Caribou Management Board is set up based on 6530 degrees latitude. It is a board that will be strictly set up to manage the Porcupine Caribou alone itself.
Okay, the other, and isn't that, Vic, doesn't that also extend into the Northwest Territories? The other half was whether or not it was restricted to the Yukon.
It includes the entire habitat range, which is both in Yukon and Northwest Territories. And there is representation from both, from the Northwest Territories.
The other question that I wanted for a point of clarification on the present constitution of, in terms of the communities in the IPCC, what Canadian communities are presently in the IPCC, Jonathan? Is it just Old Crow now, or are
no,
all of the...
No, Mayo, Dawson, and Old Crow signed off on it.
Those three
when
are
when they signed in Arctic Village. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it was CYI on behalf of the other villages.
That's right.
So CYI is on behalf of McPherson, Arctic Red.
Well, the representation would come from those three communities, Old Crow, Dawson City, and Mayo.
Bob, you wanted...
I just wanted to clarify that.
Bob, the children, sorry.
The commissioners sit representing directly their communities. There were to be two from the Yukon and two from the Northwest Territories. At the time, at the last period, during the last period of ratification, it'll be reopened. There were some uncertainties as to how land claims would best proceed in the in the Northwest Territories with COPE and with Dene Métis. And they decided, essentially they come and sit at the meetings, but they decided not to sit down until some of those uncertainties, particularly having to do with their respective negotiations on wildlife rights, including the porcupine herd, were completed. We're now ready to go back and talk to them since COPE's agreement has been terminated. I mean, finalized, excuse me.
That's next year?
No.
Bob Gamble, perhaps you would tell us about the COPE claim and its settlement, and how that bears on the Wilderness Park and the future of the Porcupine Caribou herd.
Well, you mentioned earlier about an imperfect world and your recommendation not being fully carried through. There are several stages to that. Because I gather that the Canadian government is not being generous enough to allow sufficient fee simple land selection, Native groups have found other ways of augmenting their fee simple land selection, protecting areas, particularly for subsistence use, that would serve their purposes. And COPE, at one time, called for the establishment of a national wilderness park right across the north slope of Yukon, encompassing part of the territory that arose from the recommendations out of the Berger Commission report in Canada. That hasn't come to be. What happened was that the Government of Canada withdrew all the lands between the Alaska and the NWT border north of the Porcupine River, withdrew those lands from any alienation or disposal pending the COPE settlement and pending any decisions on conservation designations for that area. What has finally come out just in the last few months from the COPE agreement is that there is part of a proposed national park in the northern Yukon. The national park proposal runs from the Alaska border to the Babbage River and down to Old Crow Flats. The COPE agreement, when it was legislated, provided therefore an amendment to the National Parks Act, which created a national park just north of the watershed in the COPE claim area. The southern portion of the proposed park is subject to CYI claim, which is on hold temporarily. Victor can explain more about that if people are interested. So what we have essentially is a very small fraction of the original wilderness park concept. However, because of the way that this is dealt with in the claims being dealt with currently in the CYI claims and has been dealt with in the COPE claim, the park regime forms a part of the total management regime of the porcupine caribou herd. Parks Canada will not have, under the COPE agreement, of which you have copies here, will not have sole management jurisdiction over the porcupine caribou herd when they are within the boundaries of the park. If there's a quota established for, as has been discussed, for the porcupine caribou herd, Parks Canada will be subject to that quota. And whether the beneficiaries from Old Crow, for example, take all or none of their quota within the park boundaries is beyond the control of Parks Canada. The area will be managed on the basis of the species range, not on the basis of designation boundaries, if you like. This is the pattern that's being established elsewhere in other claims that are being negotiated. It's interesting to note that for the most part, for all the comprehensive claims that I'm aware of in the Northern Quebec and Northwest Territories, the first agreements in principle to be negotiated are concern wildlife. And other management regimes and other things that affect subsistence use of wildlife and wildlife management always refer back to those general principles of the Wildlife Management Agreement of Principle. That's the way things are going with the TFN claim, the Inuit claim in the Eastern Arctic. And that seems to be the approach so far that the Dene Métis are using, which Dick can maybe elaborate on further.
Thanks, Bob. Hugh, would you like to add anything about the international commission and the protection of the porcupine herd?
Well, it's been spoken to quite eloquently by a group of people already, so there's no point in adding much detail, but perhaps just a slightly different perspective. And that is that the native people of the Northwest Territories are in a peculiar position in that although they typically take more than half of the harvest out of that porcupine herd annually, they take most of that harvest outside of the NWT. A very small part of the herd comes into the NWT. So what we've got then, from the perspective of Native people in the Northwest Territories, is a considerable demand on the resource, but limited access to control over those things which actually affect the status of that herd. And I think, or presume, of course, that was a good part of the COPE strategy in their land claim settlement, as Bob alluded to earlier, is to put in legislation and land claims in Canadian law become part of our constitution in effect now. So to lock in certain habitat protection measures in effect in our constitution, in addition to which they would create management structures with the federal government and YTG to...
YTG being the government of the Yukon?
That's correct. To permit them to have access to managed land management processes in the Yukon. This now has come in effect because of the passing of the legislation in Canada last summer ratifying the COPE agreement. From the perspective of the people of the Northwest Territories, as I say, this is a crucial resource for all of the Mackenzie Delta communities referred to, Inuvik, Iqaluit, Fort McPherson, Arctic Red, and Tuck depend on that resource annually. I like the idea that Bob mentioned earlier of using a minimalist approach to international agreements, and that is you structure your international agreement around those key things that you have to control jointly. Because if you lock all detail into these, then they become very unwieldy and very, very difficult to work with. Given that approach, Victor Matander has outlined in detail the agreement that is being structured within Canada. Our government is essentially on side of that agreement. We've been strong advocates of it. My previous minister was part of the commission that was spoken to by Jonathan. The early discussions on that, my current minister was, of course, very actively involved in the COPE negotiations. So I would envision our government as continuing to be a very strong advocate of an international agreement to protect that resource primarily for Native people.
I think I should add that Hugh Monahan is an Assistant Deputy Minister for Renewable Resources in the Government of the Northwest Territories, and the Northwest Territories has an Inuit and Dene majority in the population, and they have a majority in the legislature, and the leader of the government is a Native person. He was indeed your minister, I think, Hugh, and the current minister is Nellie Cornway, who is in Uvalueit. That's why you have the exceptional state of affairs in which the ministers are both, I gather in one way or another, alumni of the International Porcupine Caribou Commission. Maybe we could have some questions to Jonathan and Victor and Hugh and the two Bobs now, and then perhaps take a break for coffee, and then ask the Canadians to talk about not the porcupine caribou herd, but their current COPE has just signed its land claims agreement, where they could tell us about the approach to subsistence in that land claims agreement. The Yukon Council of Yukon Indians is still negotiating its agreement, but they've signed 73 sub-agreements. If they could, without telling us about each of the 73 sub-agreements, indicate the approach to subsistence generally, and then if Dick Spaulding, who is with us and is lawyer for the Dene and the Métis, could tell us about their approach, that might, I think, be a useful way to spend the afternoon, and then tomorrow morning we can resume with a discussion of the Eskimo Whaling Commission here in Alaska, led by What did I say?
Whaler.
Well, the Eskimo Walrus Commission, and we'll ask Caleb to lead that discussion. So we could have questions directed to all of these people about the Woodrow.
I found it very interesting. I believe it was Mr. Gamble, was it Monahan there? Here in Alaska, we have a situation where the people of Anaktuvik Pass do some of their caribou hunting within the gates of the Arctic National Park. And so there are some difficulties involved in that. And I believe you said that the proposed management scheme would be one in which harvest quotas would be established, and whether the entire quota was taken within the park area, that the Park Service would not have any control over that. Did I hear you correctly?
Yes, that's correct. I believe copies of the sections of the COPE agreement were circulated. You can see from that there are several management regimes established to look after habitat and proposed development and so forth. There are, and it mentions in there as well the International Porcupine Caribou Herd Management Agreement. Whatever management is recommended for that herd applies to the full range of the herd. The park itself, the only distinction that will be made within the park is that only beneficiaries will be allowed to hunt. So they have the exclusive right within the park. But the way it's set up there, Parks Canada will participate probably only indirectly in the management regime for the porcupine caribou herd. The Department of Environment, of which Parks Canada is a branch, will have a representative directly on the management board. So Parks Canada will speak through the Department of Environment representative on that board. But whatever decisions are made there for quotas will apply to Parks Canada. Parks Canada cannot manage or cannot usefully contribute to the management of that herd by only trying to control a take, if you like, within one very small portion of that range. It just doesn't make sense. So the management is for the herd as a whole. Whether all of it or none of it is taken within the park should be of no concern to Parks Canada. It's the viability of the population that's the bottom line.
Yeah, I also understand that the part of the viability of the herd involves the protection of the habitat. Mm-hmm. And within the gates of the Arctic, I believe that a part of the park scheme for protecting the habitat is through a system of easements, narrow corridors which permit native subsistence hunters to enter the park to hunt, and also there are restrictions on the types of vehicles that they may use to go into the park. And so I would think that maybe this would be one method by which a park might be able to get involved and might involve itself in a management. Are these the types of regulations that the Park Service in Canada also do they have these types of regulations, or are they proposing those types of regulations?
Right now, for all the national park reserves that exist in the Northwest Territories, there are no regulations governing these kinds of things in those parks. What happens is that Parks Canada has, with various degrees of success, I think without too much difficulty, just integrated itself into the game management regime that surrounds it. There is no proposal, as far as I'm aware, to limit access to certain corridors that, as far as the any of you out of it are concerned, and the people of Old Crow, they will continue to use the methods that they do, or in methods that evolve that are consistent with sound game management practices. Outside of a park, you're not allowed to run around and pop off caribou with machine guns from aircraft. Well, you won't be able to do that within the park either. But they do have access to caribou by snowmobiles over routes that just make sense because that's the way you get there. Parks Canada has no idea at the moment of placing any restrictions on that.
Thank you.
Rosita and then Marie and then Hugh.
I have two questions for Victor. Victor, you mentioned that in your In Canada agreement that you are going to recommend maintaining a list of native users. Could you expand on that?
Well, basically, what we say is that the people that rely on that herd should be based on tradition, use, and occupancy, and present use. Right now, with laws that we have in Canada, a lot of status Indians can hunt freely throughout, eh? And what we're saying here is that in terms of conservation and maintaining the present levels, there are people that use the herd right now, and those people that use that herd should have the right to use that herd in the future. What we have to do is come forward with a list from those communities, those eight communities, who those people are that harvest the herd. To regulate in a lot of communities that border the range itself, there are a number of people that live in the community that don't harvest the herd itself. And what we want to do is to restrict access to those people and to ensure that the people that use the herd right now would have the right to use it in the future. And by doing that, we have to develop a list as to who those people are.
And their offsprings, or?
That's right. It's traditional use and occupancy and their...